Blog Talk Radio.
Radio with Chris Taylor and Amy Dawson. Tonight we're going to be talking about psychic development and how to develop your psychic abilities. Hello, Amy. So basically, tonight we were just going to talk. Hello. So basically, tonight we were just going to talk about developing psychic abilities and basically how to tune yourself into becoming more psychic.
I think one of the big things that that I've run across in my own development and helping other people is meditation. And calming the mind, slowing the mind down to take in the surroundings in a better, more clear setting.
Yeah.
Do you find that helps?
To find a clear setting? Yeah, I do, because I believe that when that you are, you know, alone and that you are concentrating on your mind, I think that when you're alone, I think it helps you concentrate on your, you know, try to focus yourself, like, and you know, and I call it like inner energy, like to focus yourself inside, like, energy. And I don't remember what the word was for it, but it's almost like creating like a ball of light around you and just centering yourself, and then it kind of like relieves stress and it helps connect yourself with the outside world. And it's really good because it helps you concentrate yourself with your surroundings and keeps yourself leveled.
Yeah, I agree with you. I find that the bubble or the egg, I picture an egg of like being inside of it and being closed off, like clearing my head and then listening to the world. Like I was listening to just the rain earlier, and I could you know, feel the energies around me. And I think that centering the self first before trying to sense the world around you is important. I know a lot of people ask me, well, how do I start, you know, doing astral projection and, you know, remote viewing or anything like that? And I'm like, well, are you centered? Do you feel that you can handle it and feel it? And you develop, you know, you tell them the terminal, it's like, do you meditate? And if they ask you, what's meditation, you know that they don't know really what they're getting themselves into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I wonder at times, go ahead.
No, you can go on.
I wonder at times, like I come across a lot of younger people saying that they're psychic and, you know, they have abilities and powers, or they think they do. And I wonder how much of the media has played a part in either letting people be more comfortable with saying, yes, I have a gift, or it's pushing them to say that they have a gift. You know, 50 years ago, was it easy for someone to say, look, I'm a psychic? Or, you know, or is it easier today? You know, how much of it is you know, socially pushed, or is it with all these, like, ghost hunting shows and, like, the Dead Files and, you know, investigations, how many people, you know, sort of, like, jump on the bandwagon, and how many people are now more comfortable saying, yes, I've been able to see spirits or communicate with the dead for years, and I just never said anything about it.
Hmm. Interesting. I never really thought of it like that.
Your opinion about that?
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is that you think that there's a lot of people out there who could see spirits and things like that?
I mean, like, you know, take somebody like, I don't know, like my grandmother's generation. She passed away a couple of years ago, and she was in her 90s. You know, would somebody from that generation admit seeing spirits, or would they, you know, I mean, we had psychics like, was it Jean Dixon, she worked for Nancy Reagan, I think. I think she was a horoscope person from the White House for a little while. Did, you know, was that generation comfortable with it, or would this generation, that, you know, be a lot more comfortable with it? You know, it's like, is it like, what's acceptable in society? Is it okay now to be psychically gifted, or is it still like one of those things that not a lot of people talk about?
Yes. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that there are a lot of people who are psychic, who maybe are afraid to come out. Now, as far as, like, dealing with those people, what would you say to them? Like, would you say that they shouldn't be scared about what they are, or how would you go about helping them if you were the one trying to help these people?
Sometimes some people I know have asked me about it because they know I meditate and, you know, that I have some psychic gifts. So they ask me, it's like, how do you deal with this? But for anybody who has those gifts, you know, I'd say nurture them. Learn your limits. Learn what you can do, and make sure you're comfortable with yourself and comfortable with, you know, your surroundings. I know a lot of people who, you know, have gifts that they find it hard to interact with, just like everyday society. You know, they might feel people's emotions, or they might see things that disturbs them. You know, it's like, get it under control and know that if you have control of yourself, nothing out there can hurt you. You know, I mean, as long as you don't go poking into, you know, sometimes I think if spirits don't want to be bothered, they'll let you know. But I mean, as far as just coming into contact with, you know, everyday life without looking for things, you know, be comfortable with yourself and develop your own abilities.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and that kind of interests me because I think that there are, and I kind of wish there was ways to help people feel more, accepted, because I believe that there is, this sense that people are scared to, open themselves up and then, you know, and I don't know how to say it, you know, not feel judged by others for what they are. Like, if you had to go around telling people, like, you were psychic or something like that, would you feel judged, Amy? Like, because I think that there are people who are scared who think that they come out like that, they might think they're crazy or something.
Yeah, I don't generally go around talking about it, but if somebody asks me, I see different things than other people. You know, I'll say, you know, I've seen ghosts my entire life. You know, a lot of people know it. It's like, oh, that ghosts don't exist. I'm like, no, I've seen them. You know, people I know that have died and people I haven't known. But, you know, I think it's hard. It's like anybody coming out, like coming out of the closet. It's like there's a certain stigma attached to it that it's not what society or what we think society thinks is normal. It's like at one point, a lot of people I know who are Native American or they have like deep roots in it, like their, you know, grandparents were, maybe they're not so much into it, but there was a big reverence for, you know, the spirit world and, you know, communicating with it. But as far as like, I can't say Western societies, Western civilization, there isn't so much, you know, it's kind of superstitious to them. It's not something they talk about. But yeah, it's like people look at you, it's like, oh, you're psychic. That's, you know, they can make a social assumption of, oh, is that consorting with evil spirits or summoning spirits or whatever? I don't think it would, you know, some people do that, but I wouldn't say, like, you know, just the average psychic would do that. I mean, in a way, anybody who reads their horoscope is dealing with, like, a little bit of what people consider, like, astrology or it's a metaphysical science, as they call it. You know, it's not an accepted, like, astronomy or biology. It's not accepted. But, you know, anybody who reads their horoscope is, you know, those were written by people who were gifted. So sometimes, you know, you might... People who go for tarot readings in the French Quarter that I see all the time, that's somebody using a gift, you know, a psychic gift. Sometimes I think it's parlor tricks, but, you know, to the people with the abilities, it's, you know, it's real.
Interesting, yeah. One of the things that always interested me was why are people more psychic than others? Because I've always, like, wondered why people are more in tune to the spiritual realm than others. I don't know. I mean, do you have a theory on that, Amy? If you share yours first, then I'll give my theory.
Yeah, I've actually discussed this with, you know, a couple of people, you know, over the years, and you know, it seems like sometimes it runs in families. So So, like, you know, maybe your mother's not psychic, but maybe your grandfather or grandmother is, or one of your aunts is, and you are. So maybe it's something genetic. Maybe it's like a little marker that's turned on or off that you can see things or know things, just have it in ESP, as they call it. That's extrasensory perception. Or maybe it's what you believe. Like, I know a lot of people, they say, oh, well, I saw ghosts as a kid, but as I got older, it faded. Maybe it's, you know, people get raised in it like a religion. They would say, well, just ghosts are bad. You know, just push it out of your mind. Don't even see them. So you close yourself off to that, you know, that other world through just sheer willpower. And maybe you have the gift, or like your parents would have the gift all the time, but they closed it off. And so I think it has something to do with, you know, something genetic that we scientists right now are, you know, the human genome has been mapped. They're starting to identify what genes carry what traits. And eventually I think science will catch up and say, okay, this gene lets that person see ghosts, lets that person, you know, be able to astral travel easy or remote view or something. This is what activates it. But science hasn't gotten there yet. That's my theory.
Yes, that's very interesting. Yes, very interesting. My theory is that, well, you kind of took it to a whole another level, but my theory was that, I believe that some people, when they're born, I believe that everyone is born with like an open third eye.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that some people, as babies, I believe they're able to keep it open. And some people just forget how to use it. And
meaning they're not encouraged.
Yeah, they're not encouraged. They're not aware. Or they just don't care. I made that rhyme. and a lot of people, I'm not saying that they don't care, but they just don't really think about paranormal stuff. They don't really think about spirituality. They just kind of live life, and they're just like, oh, well, it doesn't really matter. But I do believe that people do have a third eye, and I believe that everyone can activate it. But I believe that some people, as babies, you know, are able to keep that part of their mind open, and they're able to be more psychic than others.
Yeah, I have to agree. Like, I've noticed that, you know, children do, they see things. You know, they'll talk about imaginary friends, and, you know, they have such a wonder about the world that you wonder if they're not seeing that other side. That, you know, psychics as adults describe as something different. You know?
Yeah.
Like fairies or, you know, just different sides to things. Or even ghosts. I mean, that, you know, kids have imaginary friends. They're playing with another ghost. They're playing with a ghost. I mean, you see movies about that, about the kid, the little kid having an imaginary friend, and it turns out to be this, you know, malicious ghost in the disguise of this, you know, cute little kid.
So I
think they lose their innocence about it. That's what I've heard it referred to as. You know, they lose it. They get grounded in the here and now and the as a reality or as life. And they get so wrapped up in, you know, tunnel visioned into, you know, school and, you know, sport activities, that they lose that innocence to see, you know, the stuff that most people don't. You know, it's like they just lose it.
Hmm.
And I, you know, I,
yeah.
A lot of people, go ahead.
No, that's okay. You can continue. You know, it's very interesting listening to you. You have a lot of good theories tonight.
Yeah, I was. I actually wondered, because you do a lot of paranormal investigations. Do you think that the mind can manifest something that isn't there, or is that why there's equipment used to verify what the brain, you know, what the brain's telling you? I don't know if I'm asking
I'm
it the
really
right
sure
way.
I'm not really sure what you're asking me.
Hmm?
I'm not really sure what you're asking me. Can you rephrase
that?
When
like seeing spirit or, you know, having that gift, if you go into an investigative situation, is there a chance, like, that the mind, the person's own psyche could play a trick on them? Either not see something or see something that isn't there. And is that why they have, like, the equipment, the scientific side of, you know, investigation?
All right, I'm going to try to answer this. Yeah, I'm going to try to answer this and tell me if I'm wrong, because I'm just trying to understand what you're saying. Basically, what you're saying is that why do we need paranormal equipment to see, or could we use our mind to see them?
Well, do you think it came about to remove the human error?
What, the paranormal equipment?
Yes.
To remove human error? No, because paranormal equipment allows us, like, EMF detectors and things like that. It basically just allows us to measure things scientifically and to basically allow us to, you know, like, if you notice, like, electrical magnetic field spikes in a row, you can say, oh, well, you know, we can prove this. Like, see, the problem with that is that if everybody went out and tried to be psychic, everybody would just throw that out away as evidence, because we can't really put it out. Yeah. So it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, so that they wouldn't take it as fact because it can be misinterpreted by that individual that's sensing whatever is there. But with the scientific equipment, there's this scientific proof that there is something there that maybe the psychic did sense. That here's the, you know, you've got both sides, like the science and the pseudoscience. I don't know if pseudoscience is the right word for it.
Yes, you're saying pseudoscience? In a way, I feel that paranormal isn't a science. It's what I call, I didn't call it, but some people do call it a crossover science. It's
okay, that's
bridge.
A better word.
It's a bridge between the, well, any kind of occult science. It's a crossover science, but it bridges this religion. It bridges religion and science together. And the problem with that is that a lot of people don't like, in my opinion, don't like the paranormal and things like that, because I think they're scared, because I think it's opening up a new chapter that people would like to suppress, because they don't really want to go into discovering the unknown, the paranormal.
Yeah, it's when you say the bridging of religion and science, that's almost sometimes I hear about, was it the Hadron Collider and all these very, I don't want to say religious because I know religious people that, their faith is amazing, amazing people. But these like fanatical people that were saying that, oh, this is angering God or whatever, deity they believe, Allah, Yahweh, whatever. It's a sin. They can't be messing with this, But then they say, oh, well, we discovered the quote unquote God particle. And then they said, oh, we don't want to name it that. So there's all this fighting that goes back and forth. It's like, when the religious church said the earth was flat, and these scientists were saying, no, it's not. And they were being condemned. They were being put on trial because they said, no, the earth is round. Look, we have proof. It's like, it's what, and I think that people are, I agree that people are afraid that it's like, well, this is the world I know. This is what I see. And here's one more unknown thing out there, or this stuff I can't see that people say exists that in some cases can hurt me. They see movies like Paranormal Activity 1 through, I think it's 4 now, and they're violent
I
poltergeists. They're
lost count.
flinging around furniture. People get scared. Things that go bump in the night. It's like if they don't want to know that the boogeyman exists. They want to keep him in the dark under the bed.
Well, see, the thing is that before, for the longest time, science and religion were kind of one and the same. And everybody'd be like, well, what do you mean? Like, what? Okay. For instance, let's go back to Stonehenge. Let's go back to Stonehenge. When the Druids had created Stonehenge, it was both a way to chart the skies, chart calendars, which is scientific, but it was also religious in the worship of the change of seasons. So technically, for the longest time, science and religion are one and the same. And everybody will get all huffy puffy and says, oh, well, that just cannot be. Like, well, it truly is. It truly is. Science and religion are one and the same.
I
What do
agree.
you have to
Like
say about that? I mean,
there were all these civilizations that we think, people look back, oh, they were so primitive. And there were the Greeks and the Romans and the Egyptians and like Stonehenge, whatever. I mean, they keep changing the names of who built it and when. They understood something that I think was lost in, like, I actually read quite a bit of books. Quite a bit of his books, the author Graham Hancock. He did Fingerprints of the Gods and a couple of other really interesting books. If you can sit down and get through the technical terms of like the measurements and a lot of as they say, stereo instructions, he makes a valid point that there's something that's lost in today's world. It's like we keep thinking we're making all these discoveries, but I think we're rediscovering connections that our ancestors had to the earth.
yeah, absolutely.
Why are all these sacred sites built in these places? Where is, but why are, Catholic, huge Catholic cathedrals, amazing buildings, they were built on top of old pagan sites. Was it just because they wanted to stamp out the old
Well,
religion, or was there something special about that location?
do you believe that the pyramids were, do you believe that they were power?
I'm
Power
not
plants?
sure. I don't believe they were tombs, though. I don't think they were burial chambers at all. But as for what they were actually used for, it's still being debated, and there's a lot of different theories on that. That they were power stations, they somehow channeled stuff, or they were chambers to psychically awaken people, you know, like laying in, as they call it, the king's coffin. There's a certain vibration people feel. I've never been there, so I don't know. But it's just something that, you know, I keep reading different theories on it. And I think, you know, there's the whole thing where they're aligned to Orion's Belt. And I wonder where the rest of the constellation is. You know, if it's just the Belt, or is it the whole thing? Are there other pyramids or temples out there that they haven't found yet?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the things that that's interesting is all right, Amy, I'm gonna ask you this question. I'm gonna throw this on you. All right. Why did American Indians, when I mean American Indians, I mean like North, South, Native Americans, and people in Europe, people in Asia, how come they all had access to the bow and arrow, but yet they never were, well, as we state now, they never were in contact with one another except Asia and Europe?
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's something I've read so many history books, and, you know, that was my minor in college. I didn't the access to the bow and arrow all at the same time, or was it different period?
Well, because
would they be found in the same archaeological level? You know, a lot of people say that, well, all these civilizations had access, you know, the Mayans, the Aztecs, people in, I don't know when the Chinese ones were built because, you know, people have trouble going to pick them up.
Because
Egypt.
Cavemen used them too. So is this just something humans have always used?
Well, you know, there was a migration of the human civilization, they say, out of Africa. And if these people somehow ingrained themselves with the knowledge to make tools, you know, they'd make flint arrows and make bow and arrows. Did this, like, sort of memory, it's almost like instinct. Did this instinct of making this weapon that hunts their food travel with the people who migrated so that everybody knew about it? Or... Was there some kind of lost civilization that, you know, was apparent to all these, you know, sub-ones that taught sporadic people how to make a bow and arrow, and so they all knew? You know, that you can look at it different ways. I mean, there's a thousand different, not thousands, but, you know, hundreds of different theories as to, you know, why similar things happen in different parts of the world with seemingly no connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
it
could be migration, it could be continental drift. That takes a lot longer than modern humans have been around.
Yes. You know, now, do you think that people were connected almost like the Americas and Europe before the Europeans came over to America? Do you think they were already connected at some point?
As I've been reading about different theories, I think they were. A lot of people think that, you know, they learned in school that Columbus discovered America. Well, it's coming to the point where they're saying the Vikings might have discovered America or rediscovered it, or, you know, there have been maps now that were...
The Chinese.
Yeah, the Chinese had maps of America. And they said, well, these are we're drawing our maps from older maps, the Perry Reeves map, which was a 14th century, 13th century Turkish map that was based on older sources. And a lot of the sources that these maps were drawn from were lost, you know, destroyed. So we don't know where they, you know, who said, well, these people just rediscovered it. Or, well, this group of people knew about it all along. It's I was watching Vikings on the History Channel, and one of the people, the whole story starts out with one of the guys in the tribe wanting to go west, hearing a rumor about the western land, and they're, you know, in Scandinavia, so they're talking about England. And the Jarl says, no, that's a pipe dream. It doesn't exist. It's just a myth. Well, I'm going to go prove it's there. So the Ragnar Lothbrok is the character's name. He goes and sails off and finds England. You know, rumors can turn into fact. It's like, you know, oh, there's a rumor that, something weird exists on the bottom of the ocean. Well, guess what? We'll never know until we go down there and find out.
Yeah, you know what was interesting was that the Knights Templar, they left Europe in the 1300s, and they eventually came to America. They sailed to America, and eventually ended up in Wisconsin, Minnesota.
Yeah, I've heard that. There's some kind of stone, they think. I can't remember the name of the stone.
Yeah.
But somebody keeps flip-flopping whether it's authentic or not, that the person who found it didn't invent it.
Yeah, they said that the secret treasure from Solomon's Temple is buried in America right now.
Interesting. Well, I know it's a tower in Newport, Rhode Island, and I grew up in Massachusetts, so I used to go to Newport quite often, and there was this tower, and they called it the Templar Tower because it was believed to be built by the Knights Templar when they supposedly came over before Columbus. And there's supposedly the grave of one or something carved into a rock, and they say it's supposed to be an effigy. I want to say it's Westboro or Westwood, Massachusetts, where it is. But, you know, I've seen a couple of pictures of it online. I've never seen it in person because I didn't know about it until, you know, the advent of the internet or, you know, common information on the internet. But, you know, they say that they just pushed west and that they just blended into the Native American tribes. And they just sort of assimilated themselves into it. And then you hear rumors from the Europeans who came over, oh, we saw blonde Indians. We saw, you know, red-haired Indians. This doesn't sit right with the rest of them. They don't look the same. Yeah, but they didn't speak English. They didn't speak, any of the European languages because they've been there a few generations, I think, by the time the other Europeans got there. So they lost the ability to communicate with their, you know, where they were from. But, yeah, there's a whole, that comes back of, you know, people feel connected, you know, just like psychics feel connected to certain places because they feel a certain energy. A lot of the travelers that went on gut instinct to find places, were they relying on some kind of innate ability to say, I should know where this place is because my ancestors knew where it was? Is it like birds migrating where each generation, each, you know, they go back to where they were born, or they go back to where their parents were born. Every year they go and go and go. How do they all know where to go? You know, if they're just, it's not just following, you know, they just, it's ingrained in their psyche that they just travel. How do they know how to migrate? You know, just, you know, they just don't sit there and say, well, I don't feel like going this year. You know, something inside them says they have to go. And, you know, that's something of, you know, being psychic. Maybe our explorers were psychic. Maybe they knew something that the rest of the people didn't know. You know, but,
wow, we've been really far from the original discussion, haven't we?
I was trying to,
but,
like, pull it back into
right.
that.
Since we're just going to have an open discussion, they said that Albert Einstein wasn't a genius, that he was able to access the Akashic records. Do you believe
that's,
that?
I hadn't heard that. Well, that's interesting. You know, I've heard the Akashic records mentioned by Edgar Cayce,
yeah.
too.
Yes, he said that he was able to access it, and that's how he was able to gather all this knowledge.
So Albert Einstein admitted to it, or is it theory?
It's a theory.
Oh. That would be interesting if he, because a lot of his theories are actually being proven wrong in recent years. Some of them are either incomplete or wrong. So, you know, you could say, yes, well, maybe he accessed it to get people moving. You know, that's a theory. Moving in the right direction to discover something else. I know a lot of
modern
quantum physics are based on his
way of
thinking.
Isaac Newton was able to access the Akashic records. They said like some geniuses just were able to access it. They said it was. I watched a special on it. It was interesting. I don't know how to explain the Akashic records to people, but what's the best way to explain it?
Oh, I'm trying to think. Well, it's like I almost think of it like, from what I've read about it, the internet. It's like suddenly there's this entire web of information, and with a click of your mouse or a click of your brain, you have access to all this information. It's like a library of every piece of information that has ever been known all at the same time. You know, go look for it. You know, go through it. It's like a big, big dictionary or encyclopedia.
Yeah.
For the brain or for the mind, for the psychic mind. I mean, everybody that I've heard associated with, oh, well, they're psychic. They practiced the occult, and they were connected to the Akashic records. Edgar Cayce was a sleeping prophet, and only when he was asleep did he actually talk about these things. He never did it while he was awake. You know, you want to know, like when you say that people lose the ability to open their third eye, it seems like Edgar Cayce had it only when he was asleep, or and it was almost like a state of hypnosis because he could speak and, you know, have a conversation with somebody, but he didn't remember it when he woke up, just from what I've read.
Yeah.
His life. But he had somebody to record everything, which is fortunate for the rest of us that want to read about it. And, you know, all those people, like, in the past, you know, any of the quote-unquote mystery schools, I remember I had this I have this documentary on DVD called Magical Egypt, and it went into all these theories about Egyptian monuments and that they were meant to teach people how to unlock that third eye as adults, as initiates into these schools. And they say that, you know, the mystery schools still exist today in the forms of, like, Freemasonry and other, like, secret societies, or, you know, seemingly, like, hard-to-get-into societies. There's rumors of the skull and bones. I mean, these are all just, like, theories I've heard. You know, some of them might be conspiracy theories, but who knows? But it's, like, they were built, like, monuments were built to help the individual on a path to awaken their innate psychic ability. And they felt, a lot of these societies felt that not everybody had these abilities, but it was a pretty good chance that, you know, if you were looking in the right direction, like if you, I don't know how to put this, if you were looking in that direction, you had that ability and they were there to teach. It's like they led people to the right path to awaken the abilities that they had. And then there was the rest of the world. They said that the elite people of society would get into these places, but were they the elite? Were they laborers? Were they just elite because they were gifted? Or were they elite because they were kings and queens? Or, you know, merchants or whatever? You know, somebody high ranking in society.
Oh, well, we have 12 minutes left. And I'm going to leave you this 12 minutes to completely go off, like, completely. It's kind of, it does some paranormal, but you just want to talk about one more thing?
Well, did you have something to add to that?
No, I was just going to say, well, I wanted to talk about the new show, Da Vinci's Demons on Stars.
Oh, I think that's fantastic. I've seen a few episodes. I didn't see
I didn't get to watch it yet.
It's really good.
Is it good?
Yes. Like, there's a lot of, I don't know. I read all sorts of opinions on TV shows, but it's...
So what is it about?
It's about a young Leonardo da Vinci when he... I want to say the first episode has him when he first starts when he first gets the Medicis as a patron. You know, when they first start to pay him for his weaponry, his art, you know, and they're very, very, he's sort of like a loose cannon because he tries things and they like explode on him, and he's, you know, notoriously just, he goes off on tangents, and he's a very, like the character that they portray is a very eccentric individual who is a genius, but he has his own method, and it goes into, like, civic intrigue and then religious intrigue at the same time. And from the first episode, there's also an occult intrigue. From me just reading about different things and my knowledge watching the show, he meets this strange Turkish man, and he's sitting in the Mithraeum, which is a temple of Mithra, which is a Persian god. So it has the lion statue with the snake wrapped around it. And I said, oh, that's interesting. But they don't even mention where he is, but it's underground. It's, you know, a typical, if you look up what a Mithraeum is, it's, you know, a textbook definition of what it is. And I was watching it going, this is interesting. And they talk about, well, he wants to find the vault of heaven. And it, somehow that's the secret to...
What is
invention
it?
And they called it the Vault of Heaven, but I haven't watched more of it to find out. Vault, like a vaulted ceiling.
Oh, never mind. I thought you said something.
Yeah, the Vault of
Heaven.
You're saying
this is a mature show. okay.
Yeah. So he wants to go, and the Book of Leaves they talk about in the show, and the I want to say it's the nephew of the... I could be wrong on who it is. I think it's the nephew of the Pope. Goes, like, is, like, this, like, hawk-like, like, personality. And he goes after Da Vinci trying to find out why are they so interested in this book of leaves, or vice versa. Da Vinci's curious as to what the book is because he's told about it. And the church wants to get it. And they have spies.
Yeah.
And they kill... Like, you know, there's murder, there's intrigue. And there's all these different plots of Da Vinci, the artist, Da Vinci, the inventor of machines. You know, he makes a repeating gun or a cannon for one of the Medici's. He's also, you know, a lover. There's been speculation that Da Vinci was gay and people are all in an uproar. Well, why didn't they betray him like that? Well, you know, maybe the intrigue was better with women for the entertainment purpose. But there's all these, like, different subplots, and you see his evolving genius, at least through like, two episodes. I mean, granted, I think they're up to number 5 right now, but I think it's an interesting show, and I wonder how long it's going to be. You know, I hope it's long-running, because there was a show I got into that was also kind of about, it was about the Rosicrucians and Clock, that I remember about it, but it was only on for two episodes, and they canceled
it. The Rosicrucians?
Yeah, it was called Zero Hour, and it had a couple of people in it that I can never remember the actor's name, but he played an actor in ER. It was the guy with the bald guy with the glasses, but he was in it, and it was called Zero Hour, and it was only on for 3 episodes, and then they canceled it, and I was kind of upset, because I was really getting into it, but, you know, this is along the same lines. It has the, it has science, well, Da Vinci's era science of, you know, making machines and designing stuff, and
yeah,
he's trying to dig up bodies, and they say, oh, well, that's illegal, and he has his little assistants go up and dig up someone so he can do...
It kind of,
you know,
reminds me of Da Vinci's Demons. It kind of reminds me of Doctor Who, but, like, in the Renaissance.
Doctor Who?
Yeah, the show Doctor Who. I don't know. That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, I've watched a little bit of a couple of Doctor Who's. I haven't, not enough to be a huge fan of it, but I know I'm going to, anyway, if friends are listening to it, I'm going to get a
little
flack
for
that. I
don't think Leonardo da Vinci would like that, though. I mean, the actor who plays Leonardo da Vinci, I'm pretty sure he wasn't like that in person.
No,
I don't think he was.
It's supposed to be entertainment, but I mean,
yeah, but
I want to say he was
much more
laid back.
Yeah. I think Leonardo da Vinci was just like, today I'm going to paint a painting. The end. Now, you know, I don't think it was really that exciting, but, you know.
Yeah, well, so it makes people excited about art, invention. There's this energetic young man whose his mind goes a zillion miles an hour. And
yeah,
we see his work now as something amazing, as a mystery. He's designed machines, paintings, sculptures,
yeah,
domes, you know, everything.
Weren't you an art history minor?
Yes.
Oh.
So I sat in lecture halls and looked at tons of slides of Leonardo's work and his contemporaries and how when he started making art.
My favorite artist is Michelangelo.
He was more of a, like, I really enjoy his work,
sculptor.
And he was more of a sculptor than he was a
painter. Yeah, but I loved how he just threw that piece of board at the Pope's head. That made my day. He had some balls.
Yep.
What an awesome guy. Only Michelangelo could do such a thing.
It was a lot less smoke and mirrors between the rest of the people.
Who's the Pope? I can see right now, Pope. You know, the Pope comes in, Michael, I want to see your beautiful work. No, not yet. Go back inside. I am not done. But I want to see it. Whack! Oh, shit. Why'd you do that? Like, yeah. Gosh. That'd just be awesome.
Yeah, I guess they allowed a certain amount of freedom when it came to the people adorning the walls of their, you know, basilicas and churches. No, this is man's a genius. You can't take him off and get him, you know, have him walk out. He's not done yet. This has to be finished.
My other favorite artist was Raphael.
Oh, yeah. He did some amazing work. I've seen, I used to go into the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston and just look at, his paintings, and Rubens was another one I saw a lot of.
And I like it was, Rembrandt,
too. He's good. Rembrandt, his shadows, they said he it was so realistic. It was like he painted people's, one of my teachers described him as like he painted people's souls, because there was so much, for the time, there was so much life in his paintings. You know, it was such realistic that people thought he was possessed, or that his paintings were possessed, because they, they captured people in a way that they hadn't seen before. You know, they said that about Leonardo. And if you look at the different styles, his work is incredibly two-dimensional, other than like Rembrandt. Compare them together, and it's like almost night and day. But it was a different style, and, art allows for that. I mean, you don't have to, artists interpret, what things look like or people look like, and they paint them that way. And then there's a photographer who snaps a photograph of the same thing. The artist
absolutely.
Is never going to draw it or imagine it or portray it exactly how it is. They will see it.
Absolutely.
They will put it on the canvas as they see it, and it's never like what it is in real life.
I like the romantics, the romanticism.
Mm.
That was some cool art. I love the uncanny side of art, the dark elements and the dark coloring. It's very interesting how you make things seem so surreal.
Yeah, and I think, like we started out talking about tonight, how people see things. People see the other part of reality, the psychics that, sense things or see different things. Artists see different things than people who don't have the talent for it. They see the world in a different way. And they paint pictures for us of how they see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So, we're going to end tonight's show tonight as we are coming to an end. Any last words, Amy?
Make more art. I don't know. That's
make
something
more art.
The author said is
art.
Always
art.
Make art.
Make art.
Yep.
All right. Very wise words. Very wise words. All right. Well, join us next time, Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 9 o'clock Central Standard Time, here on Paranormal Access Radio for your paranormal entertainment. See you guys next time.
Good night.
Good night.